What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to be talking a lot about the draft. Like we've been doing for the past month or so, ever since the season ended, it's the draft. This is why rebuilding teams do exactly what they do. That's why they tank and try to lose as many games as possible to put themselves in the right position come June. When the draft rolls around and you're trying to build your team through the draft like the Wizards are. So this is the most vital part of the season, of the off season really. And it's going to basically be an all draft podcast. The next couple podcasts are going to be all draft podcasts. But this one in particular is going to focus on three main things. The first one is I kind of want to dive into every possible scenario that I could see unfolding when it comes to the Wizards and the second overall pick. You know, if certain guy goes one, who do the Wizards take? If they decide to trade back, who are they trading back with? What are they getting in return? Certain things like that. If the Wizards want to move up and get back into the lottery, what does my favorite trade regarding that look like? Who's getting moved from the Wizards? Is it Tyus? Is it Kuzma? You know, certain things like that I kind of want to discuss. I also want to update you guys on the Wizards pre-draft workout list in terms of the guys that have been reported to have come in and worked out for the Wizards. So you kind of get a gist of who they're looking at. I'm gonna break it into tiers as well in terms of these are the guys that they worked out and I think they could take it with a second pick. These are certain 26 pick range guys, 51st undrafted free agents, and kind of go from there. And then probably just wrap it up with a couple of concluding thoughts about this draft class overall. So, without further ado, I just kind of want to get right into the scenarios for the second pick. So, for those of you who don't know, just to update, even if you do, the Hawks won the draft lottery, so they have the first overall pick, and the Wizards sit right behind them at two. But there's a couple of things that make this draft very weird. Typically, there's a clear-cut number one. In most years, it's by this point pretty clear who the consensus best player is. Last year was a bit different because Wemby probably would have gone first in every single draft going back to like 2000, and when did Bron get drafted? Like 2004, 2003. So all the way back to then. And then the second thing that makes it weird is that Atlanta's situation doesn't compat with the usual first overall pick situation. Most of the teams that get the top pick just spent an entire year tanking. Their roster is one of the worst in the league. They have very really no big contracts, no star players, and they're really looking to secure just the best player available to start their rebuild, or to start rebuilding through that draft. But when you look at a team like the Hawks, they already have those pieces in place. It didn't work out, and they just got bailed out, got lucky, and somehow won the lottery and got the first pick. So not only is it a weird draft class without a clear consensus number one, but there's also a team at the top of the draft that likely won't be drafting for best player available and will be drafting for fit and for need. And look, for a team like Atlanta, if they're going to draft for fit, you're already paying Capella at center a lot of money and Okongwu a lot of money. Are you really going to go with Sarr, who might be the best player available? Or are you going to go with a Risa Shea or a Klingon maybe? Or are you going to go with, you know, a Stephon Castle, one of the best defensive players? There's a lot of ways they can go, which is why I kind of want to explore certain scenarios. So the first scenario that I could foresee, and I think this is the best case scenario for the Wizards, is Atlanta has a workout already scheduled with Zachary Risa Shea, lanky forward out of France. If they like what they see and they decide, you know what, Zachary Risa-Shea, we think not only is he the best player in this draft, but he fits this team. We have a need at the wing position, and we feel like he could really help us for right now. And they take him number one overall. That's the best case scenario for the Wizards because I'm not as high on Risa-Shea as a lot of people are. And I think Alex Sarr is the best player available. So if you're the Wizards, you sit firm at number two, and you still, in my opinion, get the best player at the position you need most, center, all at the second pick. And I feel like that's a win-win scenario. And I think that's why a team like Atlanta getting the first pick instead of a team like Detroit getting the first pick, that just kind of helps the Wizards because now there's a team that might not take Sar versus other teams that would easily take him because their timelines and the way that their rosters are built, they would take the best player available instead of drafting for fit. So I think the best scenario for the Wizards is the one I just mentioned. Risashe goes to the Hawks at one. The Wizards don't make any moves. Stay put at two. Take Alex Sarr. Get the best player in the draft at center, which they deeply need. That's the first scenario. The second scenario is one that I think is probably more likely than not going to happen. And that's that Alex Sarr does indeed go number one to Atlanta. And that leaves the Wizards with a big decision because if Risashe goes one, it's a no-brainer. You take Alex Sarr at two and you go home happy, prepare for the 26th pick. But if Sarr goes one, you have a big decision to make. You have probably five to six players that I wouldn't be surprised to see them take at the second overall pick. You could take Zachariah Risashe. You could take Stephon Castle, Donovan Klingon, Rob Dillingham, Reed Sheppard. They could even take Matas Buzelis. Like there's an infinite amount of players that they could be blown away with in the pre-draft process. One of these guys could have a phenomenal pre-draft workout, good visit, really gels with the front office, and they decide to take him at two, even though some might not, like a guy like maybe Ron Holland. There's so many ways they could go where this is, I wouldn't say a worse scenario, but it's a lot more of a decision than it would be if Sarr falls to two and that's the easy pick. If it were me in this scenario, Sarr's off the board. I have a choice between a bunch of prospects. I'm taking Stephon Castle. He's second on my board behind Sarr. So obviously, if Sarr goes one, I'm taking Castle. And here's why. I like to draft players with positional versatility, I'd like to say. And I like to draft two-way players. When you consider that a lot of the players at the top of this draft are one-dimensional, where they're very, very gifted offensively, but project as liabilities or, negative minus defenders, that doesn't cut it for me. When I'm taking a player top two, I want to make sure they can play on both sides of the ball. And for a guy like Rob Dillingham, Reed Sheppard, like I don't see them panning out as good NBA defenders. Very gifted offensive players, but I mean, we see even with a guy like Jordan Poole. Jordan Poole is unbelievably gifted offensively. But if he doesn't have it going on that end, he's not giving you much on the other side with defense. And that kind of makes it a liability. Whereas, a certain guy like Stephon Castle, he might shoot 1 of 8 from the field. But he's going to be your best defender on ball on the other side of the floor. He's going to get things done. And that's who I want to draft. I don't want to draft a Rob Dillingham where, maybe he'll drop 30 one night, but if he doesn't have it going, he's a liability on defense and he's throwing up bricks and it's not helping your team. So I like Castle over the other guards at this spot just because he's the best defender at the guard position. Because I don't want to discredit Donovan Klingon or Sarr, good rim protecting bigs, but I think Stephon Castle is the best on ball perimeter defender easily in this class. And that puts him over the guards. I liked where he's coming from. I like the culture that UConn built. I mean, you saw Dan Hurley pack up the Lakers job, go win a three-peat with UConn because he's single-handedly rebuilt that program from what was a very, very good and won a title a couple years ago with Kemba about a decade ago. He fell off a bit, and he came in there and he rebuilt it. And now they're back at camps. When he talked about Castle, he told him, "Look, when you come here, you might not play right away. You might not start." And Castle said, "I don't care. I want to win." That's the guy that I like. That attitude, that mentality of, "I don't really care if I score. I don't care if I start. I want to come in here and affect winning, and I want to be the best defender." I think there's one thing. Stephon Castle came in. There's a story that I read. He came into UConn practice on the first day. He said, "Who's the second best defender here?" Basically, like, look, I'm the best defender here. I know that. You're about to see that. Who's number two? He's a confident player. He knows that, but he's a humble player. He buys into whatever system he's in. He doesn't care about the athletes, any of that. I like those types of players that put their head down and they work on both ends of the floor, don't care about making an all-star game, care about winning. And I really see that for Castle. So I'll take him at number two, Sarver's one. In terms of if we didn't take Castle, like I'd be fine with Klingon. The Wizards have a gaping hole at center. I think Klingon is a phenomenal defensive presence, huge, big body center that can protect the rim. The lateral movement, the athleticism, I think it's a little behind Sar, and that's why I have Sar above him. But again, I wouldn't be mad at it. But look, if it's not one of those two and you take Chris O'Shea, I'm not gonna riot. I'm not gonna say that the Wizards are doomed. I'm not buying the Chris O'Shea hype as much as a lot of other people. And that's why I would go Castle at two if Sar goes number one. I like where he's coming from, like his defense a lot more than I do with the other guards, and that's what propels him to that spot. So those, honestly, I don't foresee it going any other way. I don't see a Ron Holland or a Cody Williams or one of these unsung prospects sneaking into that top two range. I think it's pretty set in stone between a couple of guys. I think the search is far more wide ranging within the media than it truly is with the Wizards. And obviously, they're going to do their due diligence, but I'm at about three to four prospects I could see ending up as a Wizard by the end of the night, and that's Klingon, Chris O'Shea, Sar, and Castle. And apart from that, I don't see it. So those are the first two scenarios with the second pick that I see. And then you got to look at what happens if they trade back. And let me be clear, I don't think this is going to happen. For a team like the Wizards, you need to capitalize when you get lucky in the lottery. I mean, you saw a team like Detroit, you could be the worst in the league and still fall to the fifth pick. Like when you get a little bit of luck in the lottery and you get end up top two, no matter how bad the draft class is, I still think that you should take that pick and make your selection with it, even if the class is bad. So if it were me, I wouldn't trade back. I would literally just let the board fall as it falls to me and then go from there. But I've seen a lot of trades circulating on Twitter about the Wizards moving back, and most of them have been with Detroit. And I feel like that's the only trade partner I've seen that has enough to move the needle. And obviously, you could think about the Spurs and trading the second pick for 4 and 8, but I don't know why a team like the Spurs would do that. There's so many players that are in the same tier from like 2 to like 9, you're gonna get some to at least one of your top players at 4 and probably another one at 8. I don't know why you'd give up two top 8 picks for a chance to move up two spots. Like, unless they really think Castle's like that and he's gonna get taken at 3 by Houston or something. But I don't see that happening. And again, if I'm the Wizards, that doesn't move the needle too much for me. If I really want a guy, I'm going to get him at number two. But like I said, the Detroit move is the one that really intrigued me, and I put together this trade package. And I'm not going to take credit for it because I went back on Twitter and I saw a lot of other people thought that this move was good as well. But when I went on the Fanspo trade machine, great tool, I worked this, and this was the best move I could land on that I think works for both sides, and I'll explain it after I say the trade in terms of why I think it works for both. But here's the trade. The Detroit Pistons receive the second overall pick from the Wizards, as well as Kyle Kuzma. And in return, the Wizards receive the fifth overall pick in this draft from the Pistons and Jaden Ivey. And look, just think about it for a second. Don't make any assumptions or any vast decisions. I'm going to explain it. For the Wizards first, because I know pretty much all my listeners, I doubt any Pistons fans are listening, but for my Wizards listeners, Washington moves back three spots to number five and can still take one of the players that they like. You don't know how the draft's going to unfold, but there's so many different prospects that you could take. I mean, you look at it, Sar, Chris O'Shea, Klingon, Castle. Let's say they all go top four. You're sat at five. You could still take a Rob Dillingham if you wanted him at number five. You could still take Reed Sheppard, who some people have as the best overall prospect. There's guys like Cody Williams, Ron Holland that maybe you like in the pre-draft process. There's still a lot of talent at that fifth spot that it's not as vast as if last year you moved back from 2 to 5 and you got Ausar Thompson instead of Brandon Miller. I don't think it's that big of a drop off. So I think moving back 3 spots is fine. When you consider that you're essentially swapping out a 28-year-old Kyle Kuzma, who is on year two of a 4-year deal, a very good team-friendly deal at that, but it's clear that he's going to get moved eventually. I mean, the Mavericks were trying to trade him, and the report was that the Wizards were going to accept that move, but they asked Kuz what he wanted to do, and he said, no, I'd rather not go there. And the contract that he signed, it's so team-friendly and so front-heavy and light in the back half in terms of salary that it's just the standard definition of a tradable contract. I think the Wizards did this for a reason. They know he's nearing 30. He probably doesn't fit their timeline. And trading him would open up a lot more minutes at the forward position for other guys like Tristan Vucevic, even more minutes for Denny if you want to play Bilal as a 3 or a 4. If you draft another forward, there's a lot of things that make sense about moving on from Kyle Kuzma at some point before he hits free agency. And you're swapping him for 22-year-old Jaden Ivey entering year three. Just averaged 15, 3, and 4 on 53% true shooting. Don't get me wrong, he's not an all-star yet. He has a lot of ways to go. But he improved from year one to year two. He had a great second half of the season when Monty Williams decided that he should actually play him instead of moving him off as a sixth man. And you got to figure he's playing in a losing environment for a losing team that doesn't play good basketball. And he's going to do a lot more of that with a losing bad basketball team like the Wizards. But hopefully he gets to grow as a player with the Wizards, and gets every opportunity possible. But nonetheless, you're swapping Kuz for Jaden Ivey, which if you told me I could do that straight up, I probably would. And if you told the Pistons, I'll give you Jaden Ivey, and you'll give me Kuz, I don't think they'd accept that. If I'm being real, like Kuz is a better player, but Ivey's 6 years younger on a way better contract and can project to be better than Kuzma. And you factor in to do that, the Wizards are moving back 3 spots and can still get one of the best players on their board. I think it makes sense. I think it makes sense for both sides. I mean, if you look at Detroit, you are moving up 3 spots. And let's say Detroit really likes Stephen Castle. You're basically swapping whoever you're going to draft at 5 for Stephen Castle. Like Jaden Ivey is a guard, leaves. You bring in Stephen Castle. You trade the fifth pick for Kyle Kuzma. You're trying to win now. For a team like Detroit, you can only draft so many prospects before it just gets so top heavy. I mean, you see, they drafted Killian Hayes. They already released him because they had no spot for him. At a certain point, you got to move. You got to do something. You got to trade some of these picks that you're getting to move the needle, because just recycling top 5 picks every year and not seeing any major improvement has to be weighing on the Pistons. And they have to realize we need to make a move for a vet. And I don't think Kyle Kuzma is the answer there. I don't think he's going to make them a playoff team even, but they have to do something. And I think this is a trade that works out for both sides. So if the Wizards were going to trade back, this is probably the best move that I could find, that keeps Washington in that top five and gets them a young player to make it make sense and to make it worthwhile for them. So that's the one move I talked about for that scenario if they were going to move back. And now you got to talk about, well, what if they want to move up? What if they want to acquire another lottery pick? And the pushback on this is, why would you want to trade your assets in this draft class that's considered one of the worst in 10, 20 years, when you could compile and save those assets and instead move them next year in what's considered one of the best draft classes of the last 10 to 20 years? And that's all fair to think, but if they see a guy that's sliding, if they see an opportunity, like, look, the way we see the board unfolding, there's going to be one of the guys we really like at 13, and what if we don't see Kyle Kuzma here for the future? Why don't we just capitalize on him now? And there's been rumors the Wizards want 2 first-round picks for Kyle Kuzma. That's been their firm asking price. But if you really think about it, they were going to move him to the Dallas Mavericks last year, and the Mavericks had 2 tradable firsts, I think. They traded one to get PJ Washington, and then they traded one to get Gafford. What like would they have not gone PJ Washington and Gafford and just it all in and give 2 picks for Kuz? Like, I don't think they would have liked to spread themselves that thin, knowing they needed front court help too. So I think while reports are that the Wizards are still looking for two, I think they deep down understand we're probably gonna get one, maybe a young player and a salary filler, and that's the best you're gonna get. And also it could be, well, why would we play Kyle Kuzma 35 minutes a game, have him take 20 shots a game when we could be splitting that amongst some of our youth and giving out more playing time when we're really trying to develop talent in this rebuild instead of, giving Kyle Kuzma a bunch of looks when we know we're going to offload his contract anyway? That could factor into wanting to move him now as well. So the trade that I put together is with Sacramento, a team that was a revelation the year before this. I think they were the 2 seed or the 3 seed in the West and had a really surprising rise up and then fell off this past season because they didn't have the depth necessary to compete with certain teams. Malik Monk goes down. There's a bunch of other things. They make the play-in, but they didn't have enough, and they didn't have enough the year before as well. They still don't have enough. And they know they need a third star, and I don't know if there's any left. I mean, they decided they didn't want to give up all that for Siakam. Indiana gets him, they go far in the playoffs. They didn't want to give up a lot for OG. Give up the Knicks get him, they go far in the playoffs. Like they've been in. They were in on Kuz a while ago as well, but they've never seemed to make that move. And for a team with a bunch of assets, a bunch of first round picks still, they need to do something. And I think they know that. And the pressure is building to do something out west. So here's the move that I made for the Wizards to jump back into the lottery and for the Kings to make a splash move. The Kings receive Kyle Kuzma from Washington. And in return, the Wizards receive Harrison Barnes, Colby Jones, and the 13th pick in the 2024 NBA draft. And look, I know. From face value, that seems underwhelming for a guy like Kuz that is being shopped around reportedly for multiple first round picks. That seems like very underwhelming trade return. But you got to realize the Wizards aren't going to get 2 first round picks for Kyle Kuzma at this moment. Maybe if they held out until the trade deadline and a team like Sacramento was desperate to make a move and they said, like, F it, we're going to give you 2 first round picks because, we need to do something. Maybe. But I feel like they've done that. They did it last year with Kuz, and maybe the Mavs move had to do with Kuz not wanting to go there. But if the Wizards got 2 first round picks from the Mavs like they wanted, I feel like you got to accept it. You can't just say no, you don't want to go there. Well, fine, we're not going to get anything in return for you. I feel like it was, yeah, Kuz didn't want to go, but yeah, the Mavs gave them 1 first round pick, and I don't know if we want to take that. So I don't think you're going to get 2 first round picks. I think that's way too much for Kyle Kuzma. If I'm the Kings, I wouldn't give up 2 first round picks for Kyle Kuzma. I think you got to understand the player and the situation, and that tells me that he's not a 2 first round tip pick type of guy. So you got to take what you can get, and if you really like a guy in that 13th pick range, which there's tons of players that I like in that range, you make this move. For the Kings, I mean, I don't think I have to explain it. You're essentially swapping an aging Harrison Barnes on a $18 million a year contract you don't necessarily like for Kyle Kuzma, who is better, younger, quicker, better shooter. It's a better player. It's an upgrade at the position you need, an instant starter at the four position for you alongside Fox and Sabonis. And it makes sense for the Kings to make this move. Colby Jones, a very talented young player, but doesn't see the rotation for Sacramento. And yeah, you can draft someone with the 13th pick, but you need someone that's going to help you win now. You drafted Colby Jones last year, he didn't even play. Like, you clearly need win now players and not projects. And that 13th pick is probably a project at 18, 19 years old. So for the Kings, there's no question I think they'd accept this. If you showed any Kings fan this move, I think they'd take it. As for the Wizards, like I mentioned, I don't think Kyle Kuzma fits their timeline whatsoever. I mean, 28 years old. I don't know if he's in his prime now, or maybe he'll get better, but he doesn't fit. And I think the contract, I mean, I explained this all on the last move where they traded Kuz to the Pistons. I think he's going to get traded at some point, and this is one of the better offers that you're going to get, so you might as well take it. And the main reason I would move him is because it opens up playing time for guys like Koulibaly, Avdija, any forward that you honestly take in the draft. They get way more shots and way more playing time because Kyle Kuzma, your number one shot taker and your biggest offensive usage rate is no longer on the team. And in return, if you're the Wizards, you get Harrison Barnes, who, yes, bloated contract at $18 million this year, $19 million the following year, but you have a lot of cap space, and it's a guy that you could maybe move again for a couple seconds at the deadline. You could buy him out. You could do a bunch of things with him, but you're not going to win. You're not going to even be competitive in the next 2 years. So why not move on from him while you can, or take on that bloated salary while you can, like they did with Marvin Bagley this past season, in return for, another lottery pick and a young player like Colby Jones. Talking of Jones, it's a guy that I would have taken late first round last year if I was the Wizards and been traded back in. He's out of Xavier, 6'6" point guard, entering year two, 35th overall pick last year by Sacramento. I really like him. I know my guy Matt Modano was really high. I think he had Colby Jones in the lottery last year, which I also did. I think he's a phenomenal young guard, and I wouldn't mind taking a flyer on him. I honestly I could have added Davion Mitchell into this package, but he's way older, and I like Colby Jones and his upside way more than I do with Davion Mitchell. I think Davion's the player that he is now. I don't see him getting too much better, and I think Colby Jones can be a very solid guard in this league. So I wouldn't sleep on that addition. And then you talk about the real centerpiece of this package, and that's the 13th overall pick. They're, yes, a bad draft, and I know a lot of people, it's a bad draft, all that. There's still talent there at 13. It's the back end of the lottery, but there's still very good talent. I mean, guys like Jared McCain, Cody Williams, Tijane Salloon, Jacoby Walter, Isaiah Collier, Nikola Topic. Like, if Topic slides, there's a very good chance that he's there. Torn ACL, probably will miss a significant portion of this season. What contending team would want to take him? None of them. The only team I could see taking Topic is if he falls to like 17, it's a must take. Or you're a team like the Wizards that has infinite time on your hands to try to develop a young player, and you decide to take a flyer on him and let him rehab the whole year. And if Topic falls there, this is a move you have to make. There's so much talent still available at 13 and in all these mock drafts that it makes sense for the Wizards to do this. You, like I said, you get a guy like Colby Jones that I said could have easily been taken in the top 20 last year and, fell to Sacramento, and you get another lottery pick and you swap Barnes and Kuzma's contracts. I open up playing time. Like, I think this is a great move if the Wizards do decide, and I hope they do make this. I'd rather them make this than the move with the Pistons to get Ivy. I like this move a lot. You still get the second pick. You retain 26 and 51. You're just trading, an asset that I think will be moved eventually for another lottery pick, another young prospect, and opening up playing time. It makes great sense for the Kings, and I think this is probably one of the best packages you'll get for Kyle Kuzma. So I'd rather make that move now instead of, letting him chuck up shots for the next year or so and then move on from him. I think it's just better. And those are the moves I made. So there's the move with Detroit, obviously, and then there's the move with Sacramento. Feel free to let me know what you guys think of each move. If you prefer to make the Pistons move, where it's number two and Kuz to Detroit, five and Ivy to the Wizards, or if you'd prefer to make the Kings move, where Kuz goes to Sacramento, Harrison Barnes, Colby Jones, 13th overall pick comes to Washington. I'd prefer the latter with the Kings move, but I'm sure a lot of people would probably prefer to move back a couple spots and bring in Ivy as well. So let me know, shoot me a DM, what you guys think about those trades. And then the last thing, just kind of some housekeeping, just because I want to keep everybody informed on what the Wizards are doing in the pre-draft process in terms of pre-draft workouts and that sort of thing. Here's the list of from what I've compiled, and shout out to Hoops Hype. They have a good workout tracker as well. But these are the players that the Wizards have brought in for pre-draft workouts, reportedly brought in for pre-draft workouts. I'm not actually there, but from what I've seen on Hoopsite, from what some of my sources have told me. And I'll break it into tiers, sort of like at this pick, this is the guy that they brought in. He's projected to go in this range. for this pick that the Wizards have to make it easier. So the only person, the prospect that they've brought in that second pick range is Donovan Clingan from UConn. Center could easily go number one. Very good rim protector. Wouldn't mind taking him at number two. And then in terms of the mid lottery, where the Wizards don't currently have a pick, but if they decide to trade back in, Cody Williams out of Colorado recently, according to a source, had a workout, pre-draft workout with Washington. So that's really the only mid-lottery, second overall pick type players they've worked out so far. And I'm sure they'll work out other players in that range. Definitely will, and we'll update it. But that's that. The only person I can really see in that 26th pick range is Trenton Flowers from the NBL. 6'8 forward, 36% from three this season with the 36ers in Australia. I think he originally committed to Louisville and then decommitted to play in the NBL. But he's the only player they've worked out so far that's mocked in that late first, early second range. And then you move on to some 51st pick guys, some mid to late second rounders that the Wizards have worked out. Tristan Newton, back-to-back national champ with UConn, winner in all ways, probably UConn's best player on that title run this year. And I know Klingon and Castle are getting drafted way higher just because their upside is higher. But Tristan Newton was a baller all year for UConn. Antonio Reeves, guard from Kentucky. I think he's 6'6". He shot 44.5% from three, so he's a knockdown shooter. The only downside for Reeves is people project him to be a negative defender in the league. But I wouldn't even buy that. I mean, he was put on as a primary defender because a lot of UConn's guards like Dillon Cam and Shepherd couldn't really defend like that. So he'd be on the opposing team's best perimeter player, and obviously you're gonna get beat a lot. So I think he's still a decent defender. I think he's like a I compare him to Cason Wallace. Like it's an easy comp with the Kentucky guard, but he's a very good outside shooter at the guard position. And you know he's not a world class defender, but he can hold his own on that end. And I don't think you can ever have too much shooting, especially at guard in the league. So I would really like to take it. I would even put him higher than Newton on my board for 51, just because I value his shooting so much. Keenan Blackshear, he's kind of an undersized big from Nevada, but he dominated that conference all year. Was terrific. I watched a lot of Nevada games. Don't ask why, but he was their best player. Can kind of play that forward, the forward position. He played a lot bigger, I feel like, in college than he will in the pros. He's not that tall, but I really like his game as like a hybrid 3/4 type of guy. And then Mekhi Mitchell, who he's a 24-year-old center from Arkansas, a very old prospect, and I think he'd more likely to not be undrafted than drafted, but the Wizards might like him in that spot and take him. And then in terms of undrafted free agents, John Newman III from Cincinnati, another guard, Darius Brown II from Utah State, Teron Armstrong, I think he's also in the NBL. Those are some under the radar guys that they brought in. Haven't seen them mocked in many mock drafts, but those are some guys that they brought in, and I'm sure you know when you sign undrafted free agents. Typically, they're guys that you already saw and worked out, and you like them, but maybe didn't have another pick, and they fell out of the draft, so you sign them. So I think a lot of these guys that they're bringing in for pre-drafts, even if they're lesser known, you could see them signed as undrafted free agents, so and they'll go from there. But that's the updated list. Again, I'll continue to keep updating it on Twitter. Again, like I said, Hoops Hype has a good list, so feel free to go on their website and reference that. But that's gonna do it for this draft heavy episode. I mean, I thought it was fun kind of getting through the scenarios. I foresee really two realistic scenarios at number two. I think Risache goes one, you easily take Sar. Then it gets a little murky if Sar goes one. I'd prefer to take Hassel, but I'd be fine if they took Klingon. Wouldn't prefer Risache, but again, I'd be fine with it. I understand the upside level of the pick. There's a bunch of options if they decide to trade back. I mean, the Detroit move, like I mentioned, to get Ivy could happen if they move back. The Spurs, they have 4-8. Maybe they like Castle that much at two. That could also happen. And then if they want to move back into the lottery, a team like the Kings had the 13th pick. You could easily move Kuz for that. Another team, Memphis, I think at nine, they're a team that need a forward, and at that four spot could easily trade for Kuzma. Don't need the ninth pick right now. That makes sense. There's a bunch of late lottery teams that are looking to move, but I think the Kings move is the one I like best. And then I mentioned the pre-draft workouts and stuff like that. So I hope this was a fun episode, but also more of an informative episode in terms of a lot of the scenarios that could unfold, the pre-draft workouts and stuff like that. So hopefully keeping you up to date, as well as kind of bringing forth some fun trade scenarios and some things that I can foresee. Again, if you have any questions about the pre-draft stuff, if you have any comments about my trades, whether you think they suck or you like them, as you know, if you ever send me a direct message on Twitter, I always respond as quick as I can. So if you want, feel free to hit me up in my DMs on Twitter, and we can talk about the Wizards in this episode and the draft and whatever you want to talk about. But again, as always, I appreciate all you guys for listening. It means the world, and really excited because the draft's pretty much 2 weeks from today. Oh, also one last thing. Troy Halliburton, my guy, on the Wizards blog beat. He is hosting a draft party for Wizards fans and for honestly anybody that wants to attend. It's the night of the draft. I think it starts at 7 on June 26th for the draft at Shanklin Hall on 18th Street in Washington, D.C. So I don't know if I'm pretty sure it's open to everyone in the public, but I'll be there. A bunch of other Wizards Twitter people will be there. I think they're going to do a live podcast with mics and stuff where the draft will be on. You'll get to watch it and kind of react to it with Wizards fans. Get expert analysis. I shouldn't say expert. We're all just really fans at this point or outside speculators, but get analysis on the pick and what it means, live reactions, breakdowns of the prospect. And it's just going to be a fun night for everyone. So again, shout out to my guy Troy for putting that together. And yeah, I'll be there. So that'll be fun on June 26th at Shanklin Hall at 7 p.m. But without further ado, that's going to be the end of this episode. I appreciate all you guys for tuning in. Excited for the draft, and that's going to do it. Go Wiz.